Good morning. I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Tuesday, October 15th. The federal government struggles to find housing for unaccompanied children seeking asylum in the U.S. We hear from an asylum seeker next. But first, let's do the headlines. The San Diego Police Department is preparing to ask the City Council to move some of its cameras with smart streetlight and automated license plate reader technology. According to city leaders, the tools have led to 166 arrests. SDPD wants to expand the placement of about 40 of the cameras from a fixed location to a two-block zone for flexibility when infrastructure issues arise. The problems include poles with insufficient voltage or objects blocking the camera's view. The zones proposed include high-traffic areas like PB, Mission Beach, and Mission Valley, and also in areas with a high proportion of minorities like Convoy, San Ysidro, City Heights, Logan Heights, and Southeast San Diego. Pedicabs in downtown San Diego now face stiffer regulations, including a ban on amplified sound equipment. The San Diego City Council yesterday approved amendments that would also require pedicab drivers to provide an agreed-upon price to customers before the ride and offer an itemized receipt. They'll also need to have fares and pedicab licenses more visibly displayed. The council made the decision after hundreds of complaints were filed from residents, business owners, and tourists. This week, the CDC will be visiting some South Bay homes to gather more information about the Tijuana sewage crisis and its impact on those living in the area. County representatives will join CDC officials to conduct the public health survey. The survey is expected to take about 15 minutes and will be voluntary and anonymous. The CDC expects to conduct more than 200 interviews. The visits will be on Thursday and Friday from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 10 in the morning until 7 at night. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. As more unaccompanied children seek asylum in the U.S., the federal government is struggling to find appropriate housing for them. Border reporter Gustavo Solis spoke with an African asylum seeker about his life before and after being in federal custody.
My name is Ibrahim. I'm from West Africa.
Ibrahim is a little shy. He didn't want to share his last name or where he came from. Which makes sense if you know why he came to the U.S.
So it's for safety reasons. So I just wanted to be safe. And
Ibrahim crossed the border when he was 17. And because he's an unaccompanied migrant with no family in the U.S., he was placed in a temporary facility overseen by the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or ORR.
When I got there, it's just like a new world. I didn't know anybody.
These congregate living spaces are meant to be temporary, just until the government finds relatives, a sponsor, or foster family to provide long-term housing. But that didn't happen to Ibrahim.
I had three roommates who came in and I was there, and then they all left and I was still there. Yeah, it was very, very difficult for me.
He spent 6 months in that facility, and the longer he stayed, the more depressed he became.
It's a normal thing to see someone crying. It's a very normal thing to see. It's not something new. Like, every day someone is kind of like, couldn't take it anymore.
What happened to Ibrahim is an example of something advocates are calling a discriminatory trend. Unaccompanied children from African and Middle Eastern countries are staying in ORR facilities much longer than kids from Spanish-speaking countries.
We started noticing it a couple years ago, and what we have started to see is the population continues to diversify.
Marion Donovan-Kaloust is the Director of Legal Services at the Immigrant Defenders Law Center. She says the federal agency, ORR, is struggling to meet the needs of those kids. According to Immigrant Defenders internal data, the average length of stay for children from Africa is 138 days, compared to 99 days for children from Spanish-speaking countries. And the discriminatory outcomes are much more dramatic for children with particularly long stays.
Every child that we serve who has been in care for longer than 300 days, so almost a year, awaiting long-term foster care placement, every one of those children, except for one, is from Africa, or the Middle East.
The Office of Refugee Resettlement did not respond to a request for comment. Donovan Kaluste recognizes that the agency is in a difficult situation, but says that shouldn't be an excuse.
And we can do hard things. This is a federal government. It can do hard things. And the alternative is not tenable. The alternative is that children, you know, based on their race or language spoken, are receiving a different quality of care. That's not acceptable.
Immigrant Defenders has asked ORR to invest in more translation services and work with diverse foster families who can house children from Africa and the Middle East. Some of the kids stay in ORR facilities so long that they age out.
I saw people who were turning 18 and then they left. So I knew when I turned 18, I have to leave. But where, I didn't know. I didn't know where will I be? How will I end up? I didn't know.
Ibrahim spent months leading up to his 18th birthday wondering if he'd end up homeless.
A month before my birthday, it was, let me say, a hell for me. Like, I couldn't, I because I didn't know where I'm going, how I'm going to end up. It was just me.
Behind the scenes, staff at Immigrant Defenders worked around the clock to find stable housing for him. They called dozens of homes and asked community members to step up, and eventually found someone willing to take him in. Finding stable housing has been life-changing for Ibrahim. You can hear it in his voice. Notice how he opens up when asked about life outside the facility.
Now I have friends and life is more easier compared to like being there at that time. I always like to play soccer. I like to go to the theater, watch movie, hang out, try new food, and yeah.
He also enrolled in school and is studying to become an airline pilot.
It's something that has been a dream. So it's kind of like, I feel like I'm on the path to my dream. So I'm just trying to put in the work and just get to where I wanted to be.
Even though he's looking forward, Ibrahim cannot help but look back and think of all the other children who are still in those ORR facilities. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
Project 2025 could limit prosecutors' power to decide which cases to pursue. Public Matters investigative reporter Amita Sharma says district attorneys who don't fall in line may face legal consequences.
Project 2025 states that the next conservative administration should, quote, ensure that litigation decisions are consistent with the president's agenda and the rule of law. It goes on to say that the department's leadership is prepared to impose appropriate discipline if that does not happen. Rebecca Blair at the nonprofit Fair and Just Prosecution. She says that change has the potential to dictate whether federal prosecutors across the country pursue cases of alleged wrongdoing against certain politicians.
That would impact investigations into political opponents or allies.
Under Project 2025, the DOJ could take legal actions against district attorneys who refuse to prosecute some criminal offenses. Blair says that the proposed policy has a clear goal,
which is an attack on local control, an attack on democracy.
Former President Donald Trump says he has nothing to do with Project 2025. He has also praised the Heritage Foundation for, quote, laying the groundwork for what his movement will do. Amita Sharma, KPBS News.
The State Assembly District 79 seat is open this year because the current incumbent, Dr. Akilah Weber, is running for State Senate. Reporter John Carroll says two Democrats are running to replace her.
District 79 is arguably the most diverse district in San Diego County, encompassing the cities of Lemon Grove and La Mesa, along with parts of Bonita, El Cajon, La Presa, Spring Valley, and a big chunk of southeast San Diego. Dr. Lachey Sharp Collins and La Mesa City Councilman Colin Parent are vying for the seat.
It's important for everyone to know that I am a leader who was from the district, for the district, and who understands the district. Therefore, I have a strong track record of implementing social justice, racial equity, inclusion plans, fostering community engagement.
But Colin Parent says he too is intimately familiar with the district. Parent says there are more important issues than where a candidate is from.
Homelessness, top issue for so many people. And the city of La Mesa, we actually doubled the number of homeless outreach workers. And then also road repair. We have a real serious unfairness in the quality of our roads in parts of this district.
Plenty of issues for voters to think about as they consider who to send to Sacramento to represent District 79. John Carroll, KPBS News.
The Navy tested a new at-sea missile reloader late last week. Military reporter Andrew Dyer was at Naval Air Station North Island and has more.
Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro is in town to observe testing of the new system. It's called TRAM, for Transferable Rearming at-Sea Method. Navy supply ships have long supplied warships with fuel and supplies via at-sea replenishment, but reloading guided missiles is something only done in port. Del Toro says if the new technology is integrated into the fleet, it would significantly change the effectiveness of guided missile ships.
By investing in innovations like TRAM, we are ensuring that the United States remains the world's preeminent maritime power.
He says the new reloading capability still needs to be funded and ships will need retrofits. Del Toro says that could take the rest of the decade. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Carlsbad's new Village Arts Center is showing its first work by a Native American playwright. Reporter Katie Heisen says it spotlights the hypocrisies of woke America.
Before, we were blind to race, and now we totally see it.
In Larissa Fasthorse's The Thanksgiving Play, well-intentioned people try to create an elementary school Thanksgiving pageant that won't ruffle any feathers.
And things go bad.
Director Danielle Jaquez says the play is meta. Fasthorse wrote it for white actors, knowing it would be easier to get produced.
Nobody wanted to produce her plays because they didn't think there was an indigenous actor community or theater community out there, where we know that there's a lot.
Which is part of the play's plot, too.
I just checked your Native American Heritage Month grant, and it doesn't explicitly say that you have to use it for a Native American person.
Really?
As long as we do something that honors Native Americans for November, you're good to keep the money.
It's full of secondhand cringe. And maybe, Jaquez hopes, some firsthand cringe, too.
We question our whiteness and question who wrote our history and what our traditions come from.
It runs through November 3rd. Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Debbie Cruz. Thanks for listening and have a great Tuesday.